In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, February 6, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, it is Pentagon Solutions, where we talk to leaders both inside and outside the Department of Defense about the issues and challenges they're dealing with and how they can find potential solutions to those challenges. Today it is my pleasure to welcome two experts from Booz & Company. Dr. Eric Fisher is a leader, is a partner at Booz & Company, and Marty Bollinger is a senior partner with Booz. It is great to see both of you in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in today. You work together on the 2013 Defense Industry Perspective, and I want to use that document to shape our conversation about where we stand. We have Secretary Panetta right now on kind of his farewell tour, and he's talking about sequestration. That, of course, I used to call it the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but nobody's really ignoring it anymore. So I suppose I might have to change my name for that. But that seems to be what's sucking all the oxygen out of the room right now, that concept. When you look at that decline, what are some of the markers that we should be paying attention to other than what Congress is in the process of trying to figure out? Are there other places that we should be paying attention to when it comes to what we might see? Or is that something that is really what Congress does is really the be all and end all?
Well, obviously, Congress, as the ultimate funder of this, will determine a lot of what happens. You know, I think there are. It's recognized that the numbers are coming down, and we can have a debate about how quickly they come down and whether sequestration is the mechanism or something else drives them down, but they're coming down. And in fact, they've already been coming down now for a number of years. We've taken a third of the acquisition budget out of DOD's budgets already since 2008. I think the major decision point that the department has to address is how to deal with an environment where funding is either lower or certainly less certain. The traditional scenario would be a procurement holiday. We just won't buy stuff. That's what's happened the last couple of downturns. Those downturns followed major upswings, the amount of stuff we bought. Not clear that happened this time. A second choice is big force structure cuts, gut-wrenching, painful cuts. The Marines don't get to fly their own airplanes anymore. We give up on the triad. I'm not sure I'd charge up any of those hills. The third direction you might see is an attempt to lean out the infrastructure, going after bases, contractors, overheads, and trying to keep as much of the funding for the warfighter as possible. I'm not sure which of those three paths will emerge, but that's where I'd be focused if I was trying to figure out what the future will look like.
Eric Fisher, the first of those paths that he talked about, involved the downturn and comparing it to previous downturns. The major difference here that I keep hearing about is we were not coming off active combat after those previous downturns. So the scenario looked a little different. We didn't have a tremendous amount of inventory that needed to be refreshed in, say, the 90s and so forth.
Right.
What impact does that have on trying to do all of this planning?
It certainly is a factor in each downturn. You know, this is a cyclical sector, and each downturn is a little bit different. It's a factor, but frankly, the math still has to work, right? And, you know, even if you look at spending right now, it's still at near historical highs, despite the fact, as Marty said, acquisition spending has already come down by a third. So there are a few other factors maybe that are a little bit different as well to note, one of which is the industrial base, where the industrial bases are radically differently configured than they were. And people tend to forget how significant the change is at inflection points like this. Back into the late 1980s, the defense and security sector was largely served from an industrial perspective by industrial conglomerates, for whom defense was a very small portion of the business. This defense specialist environment that we're in today is kind of an historical aberration to an extent. So that fundamentally changes things. You can even go into the esoterica about back in the 80s, in the last downturn, the early 90s, alternate financial investment vehicles for stakeholders and the street, the Wall Street and so forth, didn't really exist to the extent they do today. So companies are under a lot of different types of pressure. So getting back to your original point in terms of the assets and so forth, that is a factor. But frankly, you know, we spend more, as I think Marty is fond of saying, we spend more today on MILPERS and O&M than aircraft production and so forth. MILPERS and And O&M is eating into the acquisition and has continued to and will continue to. There's really no stop in sight for
that. And yet we hear over and over again from leaders in and out of the Pentagon, Marty, that the acquisition workforce is too small, they're undertrained, and they're overwhelmed with work.
Yeah. You know, we have outsourced a lot of the acquisition work over the last 20, 30 years. That trend probably peaked maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I think we also have we're buying things that are much more complicated. In the old days, we would buy, you know, stovepipes of excellence, an airplane or spacecraft, and they would do wonderful things. Now we're buying very complicated systems that have to work together and talk to each other. It's provided tremendous enabling capability on the battlefield. It saved a lot of American soldiers and Marines and airmen and other personnel's lives, but it's much more complicated to buy. Not only that, we're now buying not just from the traditional defense companies you think of. We're buying from lots of unusual people. You know, the Army's latest helicopter has its design heritage in France and Germany. The Navy's newest combatants, surface combatants, are coming from Australian and Italian designs. We've leveraged a global supply base. You deal with that supply base differently than you deal with the traditional suppliers like a Raytheon or a Boeing or Lockheed Martin.
Right.
And that's complicated the buying process an awful lot. So things have gotten more complicated. There's a lot more churn. The acquisition workforce, I think, has been stretched pretty thin.
When you wrote this 2013 defense industry perspective, you laid this out with a series of challenges and a series of prescriptions. There are five of the former, and there are, I count, five of the latter. And I want to just kind of go through these throughout the course of the hour. Some of them are self-evident. Some of them, I think, will merit a fair amount of discussion. The first challenge is a steep decline in federal spending. That's one of the ones that I would consider to be pretty self-evident. And we've covered sequestration on any number of different levels and from any number of different perspectives. But one of the things that we talked about before we went on the air was the fact that, as you write here, defense spending cuts are coming. It is just a matter of how those cuts happen and whether the agency, not just DOD, but the other agencies, have the reprogramming power that they would like to have to be able to determine how those cuts happen and what that trajectory looks like rather than across the board.
Right. Absolutely right. I mean, again, the math has to work from a budgetary perspective. And given entitlements or lack of entitlement reform, given military health cost growth and so forth, given the debt situation, global fiscal situation, it's coming down. And frankly, this is, again, this is a 20, 30, 40-year cycle. This is about the third downturn since, after World War II. And so you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, if you think about sequester, as we were talking before the show, is that it misses the forest for the trees, right? And whether you call it sequester, whether you call it something entirely different, it is a matter of how quickly it goes down, how much it goes down, but most importantly is what goes down and how that's controlled. And in fact, one interesting piece is some of the companies you see are planning for a decline that goes over the course of 6, 7, 8 years with increasing delays in terms of ripping the Band-Aid off on the sequester, what have you. It delays another year. So all of a sudden the trough gets pushed a year out, which frankly doesn't help the industrial base, given how they have to manage their capital.
As the declines continue to happen, I wonder if – well, first of all, I guess sequestration may be the wrong focus for people in my business, because sequestration is a relatively short-form thing, especially as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year. Is that a fair assessment on my part, Marty?
It is. I think the real issue with sequestration is not that the fact that it involves lower spending. Spending is going to come down. It sharpens the steepness of the curve. It is the restrictions that are placed on the department's ability to figure out how to do that in a thoughtful, intelligent, and planned way. It's created huge uncertainty within the department. It's created huge uncertainty within industry. Compounding that are mixed signals from the government about how industry should respond to an environment of lower spending. I'm not an expert within the building, but when I talk to the folks in the military and the civilian workforce, the military, they're used to doing tough jobs if given the tools and clear direction. You know, my sense is they can do this tough job, too, if they're given the tools, in this case, flexibility, And if they're given the direction, some sense of certainty coming out of Congress. I think it's the lack of those two things that I worry about, and I'm sure frustrate people trying to deal with the problem.
We could probably do the entire show talking about the potential impact of sequestration, but at this point it almost seems redundant because it's been talked about and talked about and talked about for months and months and months now. And you have a number of other challenges here that I think have not been explored to nearly the degree that they should be. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about one of the challenges that you gentlemen have already alluded to on Pentagon Solutions on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back in a moment with Eric Fisher and Marty Bollinger of Booz & Company in a moment.
Challenges of measuring unobserved events. How do unobserved events differ from infrequent events? Are there data estimation methods that can assist public managers in measuring unobserved events? And what agencies are applying such methods to develop appropriate data-driven strategies and approaches? Join host Michael Keegan and John Whitley, author of a new IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a case study of federal law enforcement, as they explore these questions and more. Next week on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform, because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete, they're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world, your cloud.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIO's top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword survey, to see the results.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
No more letters on Saturdays. That's how the Postal Service plans to save $2 billion a year. I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, we'll have all the details. And the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs are rushing to deliver a seamless e-health record system for service members. DOD reporter Jared Serbu tells us going faster means trying new things. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're examining Booz & Company's 2013 Defense Industry Perspective. with Marty Bollinger and Eric Fisher, the authors of this, leaders of putting this together. And I mentioned a few moments ago, there are five challenges and five prescriptions here. And the second challenge I found particularly fascinating, it's evolving customer requirements. And you write, we're more than 20 years past the end of the Cold War, yet many defense company capabilities are still built around the extreme customer intimacy and exquisite point solution systems development that characterized the Cold War era. Tell me about what that means, either one of you gentlemen, and then we'll go from there. Marty?
Yeah, you know, there are systems that we need for the military that will always be exquisite. They'll be very expensive. They'll be point solutions. That's not going to go away. There are two problems with that. One is we can't afford a lot of them. We could only buy, you know, a couple of dozen B-2 bombers as a nation. We're buying three DDG-1000 destroyers. The second problem is that they often take too long to field. So the Iraq war breaks out. We need vehicles that can stand up to IEDs, not in the inventory. Where do we go to get them? We did not go to many of the legacy suppliers, at least not initially. We went to a set of international defense and commercial companies to provide this capability. And so our view is that the market is going to bifurcate between smaller and smaller numbers of extraordinarily exquisite capabilities, but larger numbers of things that are sourced largely out of existing or adapted from commercial and global solutions. That has a big impact on industry, has a big impact on how government chooses to buy.
It's almost, it sounds like commercial off-the-shelf weapons systems to some degree. I mean, obviously they're customized, but using a starting point that's already available.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can go all the way to commercial off-the-shelf. Those tend to be, you know, fewer and farther between, but you're right. I mean, you can call them tailored, you can call them customized. But generally, the companies that succeed most and the solutions for the warfighter that have succeeded most in that, again, if you want to call it 75%, 85%, whatever you want to call it, do start with product lines that have generally been developed for commercial purposes, other purpose, and they're tailored. I mean, think of Oshkosh on the MRAP side. Think of an FMTV. Think of, think of MC-12W, right, and all the interesting things that are hanging off of a commercial, you know, beach, Harker Beach platform. So, and the interesting thing that happened as the gap sort of widened between the two tensions that Marty had talked about, which is sort of the platform that has to do everything for a long time and rather than, you know, address less knowable threats in a more rapid fire, approach, is it opened the door over the last 10 or 15 years for a whole different set of competitors. And we've talked a little bit about this, but, you know, global defense players like Eurocopter again or BAE PLC who sell product lines, you know, internationally, and they basically tailored that for the U.S. government, or even commercial companies like Oshkosh or like Apple. And in fact, today, if you look at the spending for major product and service acquisition, non-Cold War era, to be clear, almost 40% of that spending is either going to these non-traditional providers or to traditional providers who have recently acquired the design heritage of those non-traditional providers.
One of the systems that I covered not too long ago is the Jitters radio system. And one of the moves that the Army looks to have made there is rather than focusing on a hardware-based solution, they're going to a software-based solution, and essentially they're going to be able to put whatever software they need as capabilities increase into the hardware shell that the warfighter will carry. Do you expect to see more of that when it comes to requirements over the next several years? Because that seems to be a potentially great source of savings.
It does, and we call that unbundling, mm-hmm. where there are some things that have to be exquisite, and there are some things that you could perhaps source out of a more non-traditional industrial base. A good example of that is the Littoral Combat Ship. You know, both ships have their design heritage outside the U.S., both have foreign-built radars, both have foreign-built EW systems, foreign-built guns. But a lot of the more sensitive weapon systems and sensors are coming from the traditional U.S. defense industry. You know, the problem with sourcing from this global commercial industrial base, it could be really good for things where you don't particularly care about technical advantage or differentiation. But where you want to have U.S. forces be technically superior and advantage, I don't think you'll get that sourcing commercially and correctly.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the Littoral Combat Ship. I think of the controversy around that system. I think of the controversy around the F-35 program, any number of others. And it makes me think, Marty, about what you said about the exquisite definition. Mm-hmm. At what point, I'll put the question this way. Do we expect to see a change in what the threshold is for deciding whether a capability requires that kind of exquisite solution or not?
You know, the answer is I don't know. And the reason is there's a couple of uncertainties here. One is, you know, as we pull forces out of combat theater, as we go to a more traditional defense acquisition scenario, will the acquisition organizations and the government seek to put their arms around these things and bring them back into the fold to stop the experimentation? The second unknown is, can we keep the interest of these commercial and global suppliers when the funding goes down? You know, the analogy I like to use is we're spending decades to buy 179 tanker aircraft from Boeing. You know, Boeing and Airbus together that make that many airplanes every 10 weeks. You know, the U.S. government in some of these markets is not the 800-pound gorilla. And so I think those are questions we're going to have to figure out over the next couple of years. I worry that we've gotten this great experiment underway to broaden the industrial base, to bring in this new technology and capability. We assume it will always be there. I'm not sure we should make that assumption.
Are we maybe trying to overmanage that market and not letting it grow organically on its own?
There's a fear in amongst many of these suppliers that they will be forced to live within this obscure defense acquisition system, which has been designed to allow the government to compare proposals from effectively either monopoly suppliers or, you know, very complicated suppliers with cost plus arrangements. They don't want to live in that world. They'll walk away rather than become CAS compliant, for example, cost and accounting systems compliance. And there's discussion about extending that compliance to international subcontractors. I worry a lot of that would drive people away from the market.
Eric, I want to talk more about the shifting in strategy over the last several years and how that impacts all of this later in the program. But just real quickly on this requirements subject, it strikes me that of all the challenges that you're writing about, shifting strategy potentially would have the biggest impact on this one of the challenges you're writing about. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
The shifting strategy on the requirements?
Yeah, because we focus on different places in the world and different styles of warfighting, we might not need some of the things that we've needed historically.
Absolutely right. And the budgetary pressures will just make that gap or make that difference even more pronounced.
Eric Fisher is a partner at Booz & Company. Marty Bollinger is a senior partner at Booz. And we are talking about their 2013 defense industry perspective. More conversation on it on Pentagon Solutions when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's FEDFAQS.org.
So just how many ships can one ship be? Many, thanks to LPD Flight 2. Designed by the shipbuilders at Huntington Ingalls Industries, this next generation in the proven LPD class will provide America with a common hull ship for multiple missions. A ship that's built for flexibility, survivability, and affordability. Now that's innovation. Find out more at HuntingtonIngalls.com today. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff done right.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Bobatchka down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe!
Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Bobatchka, he scores!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The best of the Atlantic 10 Conference comes to the Charles E. Smith Center in Foggy Bottom in 2013. Get your GW Basketball Conference plan today and watch the Colonials take on Temple, Butler, Dayton, and more. Get all 8 conference games for as low as $80 when you visit gwsports.com/tickets or call 202-994-7325. GW Basketball. Raise high the buff and blue.
Stress and the heart. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, a study indicates that people with stressful lives are more likely to develop heart disease and even die of it. At Columbia University Medical Center in New York City, Donald Edmondson reviewed 14 years of data from 6 studies involving nearly 120,000 people who had reported their stress levels. Edmondson says the risk of disease and death rose about 27%.
It's a moderate increase in risk, comparable to about 5 extra cigarettes a day or 3 points of blood pressure increase.
Edmondson suggests working things into your day that reduce stress, such as a brisk walk, yoga, or spending time with people you like. The study in the American Journal of Cardiology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthSpeed is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My Pentagon Solutions guests today, Eric Fisher and Marty Bollinger of Booz & Company, talking about their 2013 defense industry perspective, 5 challenges and 5 prescriptions inside the Pentagon. Another challenge I wanted to highlight, gentlemen, is you write about the rise of new competitors, and we talked about that briefly in the conversation a moment ago about requirements. But I recall very precise remarks by Deputy Secretary Bill Lynn when he was still in the Pentagon about being very careful about how they would like to shape, I believe, was the term that he used, the defense industrial base. Mr. Carter's talked about the same thing now that he's been in that position. And it strikes me that that's kind of at odds with the administration's position on strategic sourcing in some cases. And I wonder if you could talk about the juxtaposition of those two with new competitors who want to get into the defense space, and yet the potential, at least in some cases, all or nothing nature that strategic sourcing at least looks on the surface like it might result in.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you use the word strategic sourcing, it never is an all or nothing. It's not a binary piece. It's actually aligning incentives and understanding how to best vector the acquisition given the economics and the different industrial bases. And so strategic sourcing is probably a better term than industrial-based policy. So if you think about, it's not a one-size-fits-all industrial base out there. You will have certain segments like aircraft carriers, nuclear submarines, for which there's not enough demand and the fixed costs are so high that effectively we're already in a national champion or arsenal type of model. As we go into the downturn, you'll probably see some additional segments naturally move into that space. There are segments for which it's a defense oligopoly. You know, there are three, four, five healthy players generating competition and specialties and specialization amongst those. And then there's another set of segments for which you might want to source from more globally or commercially able companies. And thinking about it in that way is at least we would put forward as perhaps a good way of thinking about it, because it's not binary. It's not a one-size-fits-all industrial base.
Traditional defense companies, which are sometimes slower to deliver and more expensive, have had difficulties competing against these new competitors, even in traditional core markets. And you write about some of the new competitors that are coming into this. I noticed that the companies that you list are primarily either IT companies rather than weapon system companies, or companies that help, that are integrators, that that integrate solutions. What impact has the tremendous explosion in services contracting had on the competitive landscape, Marty?
Well, it's had a huge impact in a couple of ways. First of all, it is now the O&M budget is now the largest source of revenue for your typical defense company compared to RDT&E and procurement. That's a big change. It has become an industry in its own right, 70, 80 billion a year, pick your number. That's been a source of very significant growth. If you go back in 1988, there were 31 companies getting $1 billion, today's dollars, or more in contract awards from DOD. They all made stuff. Everyone made stuff. Today there's 22, of which only about a dozen actually make anything. That's how. And we shouldn't be surprised. We've seen IT revolutionize all kinds of industries. You know, warfighting will have the same impact. But what's happened, though, is it's provided an opportunity for scale players, big companies, think the big accounting firms, you know, the IBMs of the world, to enter the market exploiting a cost advantage. And we've seen them move from a 20, 25% market share a while ago to a 40% market share now. So they are, in fact, becoming a much more significant presence in the IT and other services industries. We'll see the same thing, I suspect, in hardware over time.
There's a lot more here we could talk about on the competitive landscape, but I want to make sure that we have time to talk about some of the prescriptions and get to the last challenge that I wanted to cover today, which is talent. And this is something that I hear all the time in the cyber realm, but it's and the acquisition workforce we talked about earlier, too. But that's not limited. That's not, those aren't the limits of where the Defense Department is looking at challenges in the talent field, is it, Eric?
Yeah, I think right. There's been a lot of talk about engineering talent, technical talent, and the erosion thereof over the last 10 to 15 years, and we can certainly talk more about that. I think one of the challenges we find perhaps a little bit more worrisome is what we'll call business skills, general management talent, both frankly on the contractor side as well as potentially even in the building on the customer side, at least an understanding of that. You really think about, and it's quite analogous to the engineering talent issue. If you think about the program management skills are really what the coin of the realm is in an upturn, right? It's all about program performance and so forth. As you get into a downturn, again, on both the customer side as well as the contractor side, the levers get a little bit different, right? And, you know, being able to step back and really think about the business side and the equivalent on the, you know, the customer side, the impact is going to be very important.
If I can just add a comment, I teach a course at Darden with 1 and 2 stars about the industrial base, and it's fascinating. You know, they're really good discussions. But I pose a question to them. You know, if a typical defense company came to you and said, you know, if you let me double my profit margin, I'll cut my overhead through the supply chain by a third. Is that a good deal? And, of course, they respond, no way. The fact is it would be a really good deal in quite a few areas. There's a lack of understanding of the economics of some of these companies and where the costs actually accumulate.
Where does that come from?
I think a lack of exposure. You know, I think there's good reason to be concerned about a revolving door between government and industry. But you want the door to work, at least in some ways, and I think we've replaced it with a brick wall lately.
One of the things that I like to do on this program is not just talk about the problems, but talk about the solutions. You have 5 prescriptions for these challenges, and we'll start to plow through those in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Marty Bollinger and Eric Fisher of Booz & Company here talking about their 2013 defense industry perspective, and you can read it linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. More conversation in just a moment.
For a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests in studio today are Eric Fisher and Marty Bollinger of Booz & Company, talking about their 2013 defense industry perspective. And we've gone through the challenges, and I'll list them very quickly, the five of them that you list, gentlemen. Challenge one, steep decline in federal spending. Challenge two, evolving customer requirements. Challenge three, the rise of new competitors. Challenge four, shareholder suspicion regarding strategic investment, which we did not have a chance to talk about, but you can read about at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And challenge five is talent. Now, each of the five prescriptions that you write about are very weighty, and I encourage folks to go and read them. We're not going to have a chance to talk about all five of them, but I did want to choose a couple of these in particular. One of them is consolidate dramatically and invest for future growth. And Marty, it struck me as I read this one, you didn't specifically refer to M&A and divestiture as we've seen a dynamic marketplace over the last 15 to 20 years, but it strikes me that that's included in there to some degree. Is that fair on my part?
It is fair. That'll be in part decided upon by government policy and what the companies decide to do. You know, there's a view that this is not a big deal, right? The defense industry's seen ups and downs. It's managed. Why are we worried? Well, what happened in the last downturn is there was massive consolidation. We closed lots of facilities. If you look at the military aircraft on a carrier in 1987, the fixed-wing aircraft, what they all have in common is the factory that built them no longer exists. You know, pretty significant downsizing. The question is, if we do that now, we're pretty much downsizing to a monopoly or a duopoly, and you know, that brings with it real challenges. There may be opportunities to consolidate even within a company. These are awfully big companies, and you've seen some of that with some of the recent announcements. But the problem we think of is, you know, we're taking a big chunk out of acquisition. We're going to be buying less stuff. We have to. The money ain't there. How do we take out the costs? And not all the costs automatically go away. If you're buying half as many ships from a shipyard, they still have to maintain the dry dock. And so the way to get those fixed costs out, and that could be $15, $20, $25 billion a year in spending on those unnecessary fixed costs. You know, traditionally, that has been consolidation.
You write in this one something that, and you allude to something we talked about a little bit before the air, before we went on the air. You write, it's hard to overstate the extent of the downturn. At some defense companies, however, wishful thinking persists. Some believe they will find the fast-moving stream in this otherwise stagnant water, but there is no fast-moving stream. And that, as I read that again today, I recalled the conference calls for earnings results in, over the past couple of weeks during earnings season. And defense CEO after CEO after CEO said, this isn't really going to affect us. It's a blip on the radar screen, not a big deal. And I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting, but that was the sentiment that was expressed right down the line by pretty much every single leader of a company that I heard. There are very few that I'm hearing. Sean O'Keefe of EADS seems to be the exception to the rule right now, at least as far as what they're projecting to their shareholders. And it strikes me that maybe what you gentlemen are writing here isn't really getting out to people yet.
I would suggest you look at the actions as well as the words. You know, Northrop Grumman is closing a facility in Norwalk, Connecticut that built the Norden bomb site. You know, Boeing has had very significant layoffs. Lockheed Martin has had layoffs. Raytheon has had layoffs. You know, they may say things for all kinds of reasons, but the actions often really telegraph how they feel about the future.
And then another thing that I'll play back on the program this afternoon is Senator Tim Kaine now, of course, representing a number of these companies, saying that they're telling him that sequestration's already impacted them, that they're essentially already in sequestration. So there are these two messages coming out of this industrial base that can be confusing to somebody trying to sort it all out.
Yeah, exactly. And as Marty said, you know, the messaging can be whatever the, you know, for whatever reason the messages are. I mean, there are other things going on, again, looking for the signs. You've seen a flurry of long-term strategic teamings and joint ventures getting announced over the last 2 or 3 weeks, which are anticipating the downturn and so forth. You know, as you mentioned, you know, the CEO is telling Tim Kaine about they're already hitting a sequestration. Well, whatever sequestration is, the fact is that outlays have now caught up with budget. Right. And it typically there's typically a 2 to 3 year lag. So a bit of the cognitive dissonance I think that you're seeing is because people have been talking about budgets declining over the past 2 or 3 years, maybe not using the word sequester, but outlays have still hadn't caught up until recently. Now you're there.
Well, and that kind of goes back to something that we talked about earlier in the program, where sequester, I guess, is almost turning into a brand name. Yeah. It's a generic name for this budget cutting that's going to happen, because regardless of the methodology, the number is still going to be smaller in the out years than we're seeing today.
Yeah, if it's a brand, it's not a brand I'd want to own. people are appropriately looking forward. I would encourage people to look back just a bit. You know, defense budgets peaked in 2010. Acquisition peaked in 2008 and is down by a third. Why don't people know this? Even very talented and highly respected budget wonks often don't think about this. And part of it's because people focus on the base budget. They don't realize that if you're a defense company, the Chinook helicopter bought with supplemental funding looks awfully much like the one you buy with base funding. It's the total number. We've had unprecedented use of supplemental funds to buy stuff. In 2008, $2 of every $5 that went to buy equipment or budget for equipment came from supplemental spending. When you factor that in, you already see the downturn underway. It's just hitting, as Eric mentioned, the balance sheets and the P&L statements of the companies now. But frankly, there is a downturn that lies ahead of us, even if we didn't do sequestration.
That seems to be what you're writing about, too, that is maybe the most difficult to parse because of the mixed messages that are coming out of the companies, Eric.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, there are mixed messages, I think, coming out of the customer side as well. You know, don't plan for sequestration. We'll plan for sequestration. I think that's been moving. Don't consolidate. Well, maybe we will allow consolidate. And look, that's a natural evolution at an inflection point like this. But coherence in terms of messaging on both sides and action will ultimately converge, but we're certainly not there yet.
I want to talk about one more of your prescriptions when we come back and wrap up. And the reason that I like this one so much is because you give a very specific example in this particular case. So we'll do that when we come back to wrap up with Eric Fisher and Marty Bollinger of Booz and Company in just a moment. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, looking at Booz's 2013 defense industry perspective.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball. It's presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd. Take part in a fabulous auction and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. For sponsorship opportunities or to purchase raffle tickets, visit leukemiaball.org.
What are the challenges of measuring unobserved events? How do unobserved events differ from infrequent events? Are there data estimation methods that can assist public managers in measuring unobserved events? And what agencies are applying such methods to develop appropriate data-driven strategies and approaches? Join host Michael Keegan and John Whitley, author of a new IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a case study of federal law enforcement, as they explore these questions and more next week on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Ovechkin down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe! Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Ovechkin, he scores!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, examining Booz & Company's 2013 Defense Industry Perspective with its authors Eric Fisher and Marty Bollinger. And gentlemen, one of the prescriptions I wanted to make sure we had a chance to cover out of the five that you write about is don't miss the opportunity to invest in things that matter. And you write, don't wait to identify those capabilities that matter, and don't spread the effort too thin by trying to be world-class at everything you do. Now, that fits well with what we talked about requirements earlier, Eric. And you have an example here listed as one particular company that you think is doing this right.
Yes. First, generally answer, addressing it is, crisis is a terrible thing to waste. During the last downturn, it's hard to find a leader in a position during the last downturn that said, we didn't change enough, we didn't take cost out quickly enough, and we didn't reinvest quickly enough. But, thinking about cost as discretionary investments in new capabilities is kind of the way we tend to think about it. In an upturn, you tend to pad lots of capabilities and costs with things that, frankly, don't necessarily stand the test of time. Take those costs, reinvest them. The particular example you're referring to from the paper is Boeing commercial aircraft, really Boeing defense, using commercially derived aircraft for the P-8 and the tanker, right, the 737 and the 767. And, really focusing on tailoring – investing in being able to create commercial platforms and tailor those for specific missions as opposed to, single purpose, unique solutions.
Marty, is DOD finally out of the habit permanently, do you think, of making everything from scratch or asking for everything to be made from scratch? Are they going to be amenable for the foreseeable future to this kind of tailoring that Eric's talking about?
I think they will have to continue and expand upon this. There really is no going back for a couple of reasons. One is a lot of the warfighters, the captains that were in the field in Iraq and Afghanistan and now the colonels in the program executive offices and acquisition organizations, and they liked what they saw. They liked the ability to field quickly, the support you get from using a product with a large global installed base, the better price point of a lot of those assets. Let's not forget, though, there will always be some exquisite things. We're not going to buy, nuclear submarines from France or from, a commercial supplier. There will always be some. The other reality is we just can't afford to buy these things. And so we're moving to a high-low mix. The challenge, I think, for a lot of the companies is the capabilities they may need in the future may look a lot more like commercial capabilities than ever more increasingly exotic military kind of capabilities. The ability to develop product line strategies, to have to price to value, to bring on board the right kind of talent that can think commercially. You know, Boeing benefits from having a long-standing balance of military and defense. And, you know, I suspect some of the defense companies would like nothing more than to find a way to bring some of those commercial capabilities into the fold if Wall Street lets them. And Wall Street sort of has told them not to do that in the past.
Right. Just to wrap up very quickly, the fifth prescription is develop and reward the general manager. And I encourage folks to go and read that. But you wrote something there that I think applies to all of this, everything we've talked about so far. The same leadership skills that have characterized success over the past decade or two will not necessarily apply during a downturn. And Eric, it strikes me that this kind of goes back again to something else that we talked about, is maybe not everybody realizes that yet or understands how much impact that statement will have over their business models over the next decade or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, these cycles are long, and there are a few people around who went through the last one, at least in leadership positions. And, you know, some skills translate, some skills don't, on both sides. But being able to sort of first recognize and then accept and understand where those skill sets have to go is the first step.
Gentlemen, I have a lot more that I'd love to cover with you, and we're completely out of time, but I'm grateful for you coming in and talking about this today. The 2013 Defense Industry Perspective from Booz & Company, linked up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Dr. Eric Fisher, a partner with Booz & Company, and Marty Bollinger, a senior partner at Booz. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We'll archive our conversation later today, too, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming in just a few minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.